Hi guys, just before you listen to this week's episode with Javier Joaquin, all about the world's worst assassins, a very, very quick thank you to our two newest Patreon donors. That is Mysterious Hannah. Hannah, who we're guessing from your email address, maybe from Wales, and also to Thomas Vache, who very kindly sent us a message on Patreon after donating to say how to pronounce his surname. Thank you very much to both of you, Hannah, for donating a couple of quid a month, and to Thomas for becoming our first ever $20 a month donor. Gosh damn, that's generous of you. That means that Thomas will be appearing as a guest on a future episode, which he's the first person to do that. That's very exciting. We're really pleased, really touched, and hopefully it'll keep us making this show for many, many years to come. We've got plans for what to do with all this money, don't you worry. Live show and book and possibly some video content. Ben and I have been exchanging messages at length about the topic. So thank you to Hannah, thank you to Thomas, and thank you all, as ever, for listening to Worstfoot Forward. If you want to find out more about us, you can follow us on Twitter at Worstfoot, find us on Facebook, or look up our website, worstfootforwardpodcast.com, and you can send us an email to worstfootforwardpodcast.com if you want to get in touch about anything, well, not literally anything, mainly show-related. We're not going to, you know, give out our favourite recipes or hot tips for getting red wine out of the carpet. There are probably better podcasts for that. Meanwhile, hopefully you enjoy a very cheerful, very funny episode about the world's worst assassin. Welcome to Worst Foot Forward, where we celebrate the best of the worst. I'm Barry McStay, and each week I, my co-host, and our guest propose our candidates for the title of the world's worst something. This week, we are finally doing the subject dearest to my heart, world's worst ass. It gives me great joy to talk to you all about some of the really inferior backsides that I, as a gay man with a penchant for a rear end, have had to endure over the years. And frankly, I've got a lot to say on them. What's that, Ben? What? I've got a crease in the page in my, with my notes. I'll just unfold. Oh, I see I've made a grave error. Apparently this week we're talking about the world's worst assassin. And now this next bit of my intro isn't going to make any sense, so well. Well, alongside me is the perfectly round entry point to my deadly weapon. Oh, actually it works perfectly. It's Ben Van de Velde.
Absolute filth. Absolute
I'm determined for us to get an explicit rating on iTunes.
We must already have an explicit rating on iTunes.
If we don't, well, iTunes, you're cunts.
So childish. Anyway, our guest this week, ladies and gentlemen, is a comedian, an improviser, an acrobatic martial artist, a magician, and a card shark better than Gambit from X-Men. Mm. He hails from New Zealand, but in his own words, with a face from everywhere. He started doing comedy in 2007, quickly racking up a number of awards. He came over to the United Kingdom and is currently playing some of the biggest clubs in the country and some of the finest festivals worldwide. Alongside a stand-up comedy show, he is renowned as the Card Ninja, using the 52 cards in the pack as well as the Jokers as deadly weapons to flick things from high ledgers, back villains into a corner, and abuse the person of any watermelon within a 100-meter radius of him. He is the most dangerous man in the casino. It is Javier Joaquin.
Hello, hello. Wow, hello. That's an amazing intro.
Thanks, pal.
You've done a lot.
I want that every time I do anything.
Yeah, all right, we can make that happen.
When I enter a room, I want that.
They sort of left Gambit out of all of the X-Men's, the movies.
They have.
They did have him in Wolverine Origins, X-Men Origins
Oh,
Wolverine.
Yeah, he's in that.
Taylor Kitsch played him, but it really annoyed me because he uses telekinesis on the cards, he doesn't throw them.
Oh, yeah.
Which is bullshit.
Yeah, because actually being able to actually throw cards in a really cool way is a sort of superpower we could all aspire
to. Well, Gambit actually charges the cards with the kinetic energy, so he kind of creates them turns them into little grenades.
Yo, do you think he spends ages rubbing them on his hair? Trying to stick them to walls and things.
The early versions of Gambit did not prove to be very...
The early versions of Gambit is just your stepdad trying to impress you at your 6-year-old boy.
Detaching his thumb.
Yeah.
Putting it back up. Got your nose. Will he ever give my nose back?
So, describe to listeners what you actually do with cards.
With cards, I've got an act called Card Ninja, which involves me throwing playing cards around, kind of like shurikens, and talking about ninjas. So combining martial arts and playing cards as weapons.
Yeah, because I remember doing a show with you. Where is like your big closer? You did pierce the skin of a watermelon with a card.
Yes,
and bless you, I think you got to about card 27.
Oh, that was in a quick day.
Oh, really? Yeah. No, but it's like it's like proper street performer carnival stuff. Just going. What I'm doing is difficult, but also it's just a one shot kill. And the really hard thing is keeping the ball in the air of the audience.
Oh, absolutely. The funny thing is about the watermelon. I often finish with the watermelon, and the worst thing you can do.
How long is your act going to be? Between 5 and 27 minutes.
I often finish with the watermelon as said by the most daring Thai performers as well.
The worst thing you can do with the watermelon is get it on the first shot.
Yeah.
Because people just go, well, he said he was going to do it and he just did it. And then there's no... You want the suspense. You want people going, I don't think he can do it. You know, I think he's overstretched here.
Yeah.
And we're about to witness a bit of a break. Oh, he got it. Yay.
Yeah, it's sort of a Tommy Cooper style magician stuff. Although I don't think you do that with sawing the woman in half. Did you work your way through different types of melon to come up with the one with the most pierceable skin?
Rock melon can fuck off.
Yeah.
I did have, I used to say, now I'm going to try putting a card in the world's hardest fruit, a watermelon. And someone in the crowd went, what about coconut? I was like, I didn't know enough about fruits and plants. Is coconut technically a fruit?
I had a rant about this on stage this week about the whole thing of like whales being mammals.
Yeah.
Because if whales are mammals, then whales breastfeed, and I've never seen a whale boob.
That's the whole thing, mate.
It's like the dark side of
a giant boob.
Yeah.
There's no body. It's just a boob with fins.
That's why they're so big.
Yeah, exactly. Just,
like dairy.
The whale body is tiny. The boob is huge.
So the real question is, where are all the male whales?
Oh my god, well, so maybe whales actually reproduce.
They're actually pollock. They're tiny.
They reproduce by splitting in half, like amoebas.
Oh, what a majestic sight to see the whale rip itself in two.
Yeah. I can't, any Japanese fisherman will be thinking, all our Christmases are coming at once when that happens. I cannot wait for Blue Planet 5 through the looking glass. Chav, we always ask our guests what they are worst at in the world. We know what you're best at is flinging cards willy-nilly at produce.
Free willy-nilly.
Unbelievable.
I cannot separate plastic bags. You know when I can't do it. Like, you know when they come
like,
flat.
Oh, like a shopping
bag. Like separate. You know when they come flat, you need to find a.
Oh, like bin bags.
Up. And like a bin bag or a luckily they're going out of becoming extinct. But when you rub them between your fingers to get this, I can't do it.
You need to generate.
I know what I need to do. I'm just saying I can't do it. I haven't sat there cracking, like sitting there trying to like unravel the riddle of the bag. I just can't fucking do it, mate. Don't tell me what I need to do.
I think I know what your mistake is, though. You're sitting there waiting for it to split in two like whales do.
Yes. my fingers, I just don't have the grip on it. It's something I can't physically. I've sat there for minutes, which is hours in bag time. Yeah. Trying to do it.
By the way, this is a side note, but I am going to play this game with you now. My wife studied German at university and has got a ridiculous vocabulary for it. So I played a game of Can You Guess This Animal from the German? And she managed to guess like mad animals in German.
This is going to be some great extra content.
It is. No, it just occurred to me and I thought you guys will both really enjoy it.
Let's do it.
So do you know what an Amishan eagle is?
An Amish eagle. So it's an eagle that refuses to use technology.
Amishan
eagle. Yeah.
It sounds like needle to me, so I'm going to say porcupine.
Oh, fuck, wow. He's so good.
Is that right?
No, it's an echidna.
Oh,
echidna.
Nice, good.
Yeah. A schnabeltier.
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 Die Schnabeltier.
Is that a deer? So, like, is it a reindeer?
I'm going to say...
No.
It sounds so ridiculous. I'm going to say platypus.
Fuck, he's so good! Wow. How did you get there?
Was it Schnabeltier?
Yeah.
Like, Schnabel, that's the...
Schnabel's the bill!
That's a bit you would describe the movement of a platypus's bill. Like, it's Schnabel.
They schnabble at you.
It's
Schnabel, surely.
My favourite word in German is Schmetterling, which is...
Butterfly.
Butterfly.
It sounds so violent.
Exactly, it's like the most beautiful butterfly. Schmetterling!
Okay, I've got...
Fly, my Schmetterling, smart fly!
I can't believe it. Was it really platypus?
Yeah, it was really platypus. Okay, I'm just going to give you one more. What is an Aardvark?
Aardvark.
Yes!
Yes!
My God! Do you know what? I'm impressed with you two. I'm less impressed with my wife.
Well, hang on. She studied German. I didn't study German.
Yeah, that's what's more impressive with you guys.
Schnabel is now the name given to Schnabel. The waggling of a platypus's teeth.
Yeah.
There are a lot of hilarious assassinations through history. Let's not mess about them. Yeah. They're really, and obviously lots of very tragic and serious ones that I'm going to try and skip around. But I'm going to begin by going to 16th century China and to a gentleman who was born with the name Zhu Haokong, but he is more commonly known as the Jiajing Emperor. And Jiajing means Admiral Tranquility, and never has a man been more poorly named. He was renowned for being ruthless and lecherous, even by the standards of Middle Ages to early modern China. He wanted to pursue eternal life, and he believed that one of the elixirs of eternal life was to force the virgin palace maids to collect menstrual blood for his consumption.
Wow.
Yeah. Like, pretty crackers. Unsurprisingly, after a while, his various concubines and palace maids went, should we just kill him? Because this is awful. The lead palace maid was behind this thing called the Renyan plot, and she decided to try and strangle the emperor with the ribbons from her hair while the others held down the emperor's arms and legs.
Sweet, yeah. The kind of Princess Leia Jabba the Hutt style.
Right, nice. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah, well, that's how Jabba the Hutt kept his smooth complexion, because he actually drank Wookiee menstrual blood, which is full of hair.
The mighty Chewbacca.
But she made the fatal mistake if she tied a knot around the emperor's neck. But
fatal mistake for who?
For her.
Oh, I see.
Because it was the wrong kind of knot and wouldn't tighten.
One of those magician knots that would go.
Yeah. So basically, if she'd have attended scouts, she would have been able to kill this emperor.
Slightly backfired.
And so as that happened, some of the maids began to panic, and one of them thought, actually, we're going to get in trouble, and rang to the empress, and the plot was exposed and foiled.
You know,
was that bitch that just kind of jumped ship at the first sign of trouble?
You're
going to get us all killed.
Yeah.
Do you know what I always wondered about? Imagine me the person convening that meeting. I'm pretty sure everyone's going to be on board with this idea of committing murder as a group. I think I know my friends. I think I could come round to your house, get a few of my friends around, and go, listen, Ben, let's just kill somebody. It's going to be, like, ultimately, what are friends for if not supporting each other in their personal endeavours?
If you were to sell it to us as some sort of immersive board game... Basically,
there's victory points for how many stabs you each managed to achieve. Yeah. Fair play to that maid, whoever, you had the gavel.
Do you know what the sad thing would have been? They would have gone like, okay, yeah, how are we going to do it? Okay, ribbon strangulation. Who's the best with ribbons? You're pretty good.
Yeah.
I am pretty good with ribbons. I'll do it.
Yeah. Smuggling guns in your robes is pretty tricky.
Yeah. Concubine, what are you doing with the fireworks,
It's going to be very hard. And I guess the doubly tricky thing as a concubine is obviously you can't run very fast, so it has to be
because they're foot binding.
Like you'd want to go, should we kick our head in his head in that?
Yeah. But sorry, this woman who attempted to strangle him but couldn't tie a knot, was she not paying attention to the people tying her feet? That feels like a missed opportunity.
No, but it's like whenever you were like a kid and went to Clark's or whatever and got your foot measured.
On those machines,
yeah. Which I really loved.
Yeah,
but I didn't pay attention. I just stood into the middle distance like some tiny little emperor. I was like, yes.
Imagining you were being dressed by your palace tailor.
Right, exactly. So she wasn't paying any attention to having a foot bound.
So remember they had like the manual version of those machines, which were like the old things you used to scan checks with in shops.
Yeah.
And then I remember the first time my local Clark's got the electronic one. Did you have one of the big, which were like the world's earliest computers, which are like the size of 17 buildings.
Yeah.
You had to put your foot into this one thing, then it closed. Felt like I was getting a CAT scan the first time.
Here's your new bionic foot.
Anyway, so I looked at them. I then I found a couple of fun names that led me down rabbit hole. So there's a chap called Roderick MacLean, and he was a Scotsman who attempted to assassinate Queen Victoria at Windsor. Yeah. He was the last person to attempt to kill her. Roderick MacLean's reason for trying to assassinate Queen Victoria was that apparently she wrote a very curt reply to some poetry that he had mailed to her.
Was another wannabe McGonagall.
Hold that thought.
No.
It turns out, though, that the weapon he brought along might have actually just been a fake, because in a report on it from the Litchfield Mercury newspaper, they say it was a mere toy. The life of the beloved monarch was not seriously endangered. A number of Eton boys were round the station at the time, and one of them rushed forward and struck McLean with his umbrella, disconcerting his aim.
Wow.
So basically, if your assassination attempt is foiled by some 11-year-old Etonian with a straw boat and an umbrella...
Did he have a gun that shot bang? Mom. That reminds me of when Andrew Jackson, there was a guy tried to kill Andrew Jackson, the American president.
Yeah.
Richard Lawrence, who was a painter. He thought he needed to kill Andrew Jackson because he thought Vice President Martin Van Buren would establish a national bank, which would allow the Congress to pay this guy, Lawrence, the money he was owed, because Lawrence was convinced he was Richard III, King of England, who was at this point dead for about 350 years.
How convinced was he? Was he going, oh, I can just feel this massive car park on top of me?
Oh, convinced in that he started buying really expensive clothes, would stand on like the doorstep of his house staring out into the middle distance, and would bow to children of the neighbourhood who called him King Richard. So he was quite deep into it. But he tried to shoot Jackson, his pistol backfired. He had a go with his other pistol he was carrying too. It also misfired, and Jackson started whacking him with his walking stick.
Nice. The odds of two pistols misfiring, because I looked at this, it was about one in about 250,000.
Oh, really?
The odds of both, and like, this is just plain bad luck as you can get. Like, the guy bought a backup pistol.
Yeah, yeah.
He bought
the same brand of pistol. Apparently they were quite susceptible to being affected by damp, and it was January, so...
It was two for one sale. Like,
yeah.
I'd like to think that pistol company went into receivership.
Yeah, immediately.
But there's a little bit more to the story of Roderick McLean. He was tried for high treason and was found not guilty, but insane,
yeah,
after 5 minutes of deliberation, and spent his remaining days in Broadmoor. The Queen was not happy with this and asked for a change in the law so people could then be considered guilty, but insane as well. And that led to the Lunatics Act of 1883. But you mentioned our friend William Topaz McGonagall, yeah, in our opinion, the second worst poet of all time.
Mm.
He wrote a poem about McLean's attempt on the Queen's life.
Did he now?
Yes. So I'm going to read to you an abridged version of The Attempted Assassination of the Queen by William Topaz McGonagall. God prosper long our noble queen, and long may she reign. McLean, he tried to shoot her, but it was all in vain. For God, he turned the ball aside, McLean aimed at her head, and he felt very angry because he didn't shoot her dead. There's a divinity that hedges a king, and so it does seem, and my opinion is it has hedged our most gracious queen. McLean must be a madman, which is obvious to be seen, or else he wouldn't have tried to shoot our most beloved queen. He really tries to hammer home the queen rhyme.
He's like, what rhymes with queen? McLean! Oh, it writes itself!
Done!
My favourite stanza is, long may she be spared to roam among the bonny Highland floral, and spend many a happy day in the palace of Balmoral.
Oh,
no wonder
God.
She didn't want to see him. Jesus.
Let's go to 17th century Switzerland. A gentleman called Jörg or Jörg Janach, a political powerhouse, a Swiss preacher during the 30 Years' War. And as you can imagine, in an unstable time of European history, a lot of people wanted to kill this guy.
Mm-hmm.
He was killed in the most remarkable way I have ever read. There was a carnival going on, and there was quite a lot of revelry, a lot of drunkenness, and so him and his mates went down to celebrate the carnival in a private room of a tavern, when suddenly a bunch of strangers appeared, all of them masked and in fancy dress, including one man who was decked out in a full bear suit, wielding an axe. In the bear suit, there was a bulge that was very clearly a concealed pistol.
Wow.
And the guy didn't say, well, Yogi, is that a bear in your pocket, or are you just pleased to see me?
Well, presumably he had a right to bear arms. I'm going to give myself a little high five.
Damn it. The group basically said, can we join you? And Janach said,
hang on. I'm bad enough when like I'm sat at a joint table at a pub and some randomer with his newspaper comes up and goes, do you mind if I sit here? Are you waiting for anyone? A guy in a bear costume with an axe.
It's part of the carnival. He said, yeah, sure, join me. The bear then saluted Janach. I assuming not with the axe holding hand, and then went to shake his hand. The second that he grabbed his hand, the guy in the bear suit fired the hidden pistol and hit him in the gut.
Wow.
The masked men then unveiled their weapons and basically a sword fight started. Apparently, according to some reports, Yenech tried to defend himself against the swords with a candlestick in full kind of like swashbuckling fashion.
But that's inventing Cluedo.
He was killed in the tavern by the bear with the axe. So, I mean, this guy was a great assassin, but I just love the idea of basically this guy being killed by Rupert the Bear.
That's so ignominious.
Nero became emperor in the 1st century AD, but his mum, Agrippina, still held a lot of the power.
Oh, I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, so he wanted to try and kill her. And his chosen method of killing her was rigged ceilings, collapsible ceilings. So basically...
Nice. Yeah. Original.
Big fan of Home Alone.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a missed opportunity. Hollywood in the 90s should have done a young Nero movie with Macaulay Culkin.
Just a Home Alone, but set in Roman times.
Yeah, that's true.
Rome alone. It writes itself. Perfect. So he set up like a collapsible ceiling above her bed. Problem is that Agrippina wasn't the first person to get in a bed, because if you're a Roman empress or mother of the emperor, you use slaves as bed warmers.
Yeah.
By that, I don't mean that you like heat up a slave in a bed and then stick it in underneath the mattress.
Assuming you fill them with really hot water.
Yeah.
Put a little woolen thing around them.
Yep. So the slave went in the bed collapsed. Agrippina's like, whew, that was a lucky escape.
Yeah, yeah.
Next, he built a self-sinking boat and tried to get her to go on that. But partway through the cruise, like the mechanism made the ceiling collapse, but that didn't kill her.
It sort of dropped a weight through the deck and made a hole in the ship. But she was quite a good swimmer.
Yes.
It was a brilliant plan, bar the fact that she could swim.
Her amazing backstroke.
But so eventually, he just got three men to stab her.
Yeah.
Simplicity is key.
Yeah.
like, we all want like a lovely, lavish plot, but like simplicity, guys.
Yeah.
But pointy end goes in her.
Yeah. That's it. The Roman divers came with a label saying, this end up.
Yeah.
Bulgaria. So, there was a chap called Ahmed Dogan, and he was the chairman of the Bulgarian Movement for Rights and Freedoms Party. In January 2013, someone tried to kill him. An assassin, he was a petty criminal, called Oktay Enimemedov. Problem was, this guy was so skint he couldn't buy a proper gun. So instead he got a gas pistol, which basically fires pellets of tear gas at people.
What?
Yeah, but you can't kill someone with that unless you get to point blank rage and fire it at their eye, and then they get tear gas in the face.
So they die from dehydration from crying so much.
How do you know this? Like, someone's like, oh, if you want to kill someone, you've got to get right in their face, man. We try to kill people from 5 feet away, it doesn't work.
Well, no, I assume whenever you buy a gun, it's got the instruction and the guarantee in like 25 different languages. This guy, he has worked out the mechanics of how a gas pistol firing tear gas works. You need to get to within 6 inches of a guy, fire it in his eye, he might die. So there's this incredible picture of a guy.
If you're that close, you may as well stab him.
Pointy end goes in. Jesus, guys.
How many times?
So he gets up, and this guy sort of looks like the politician looks like a diminutive Bulgarian Sven-Goran Eriksson. He's got kind of like the white hair and the domed bald head. He doesn't look like he's that hard or anything. So the criminal gets up to the stage of this press conference he's holding, sticks the gun in his face, pulls the trigger, and the gun had jammed.
Oh, no.
And brilliantly, the politician he's trying to kill just swats the gun away and lamps him.
Nice.
And then loads of people, just everyone, piles in on stage. There's a guy with an umbrella in the footage. You just start beating him with an umbrella.
There's nothing better than politicians having a fight. I love when you get footage of like some parliament from around the world where they've had a disagreement over a bill and suddenly they're throwing punches in the chamber.
It's lovely to watch, isn't it?
Yeah, that's why the Tory party wanted to elect Boris, because they've seen what he's done on the
rugby pitch. Just have a fight club about it.
For my selection for the world's worst assassin, I don't know if I've ever selected one of these before, I'm going to select a Nazi.
Oh, nice. We're finally getting them on the show.
And this,
finally the Nazis are having their time.
So, it is 1943, and the Nazis are having a similar idea to the Allies. They're thinking, if we can just lop off the head of the enemy, then it will all collapse. And obviously there were various bungled plots to try and kill Hitler.
Yeah.
But they wanted to kill Churchill. And what their plan was to kill him with exploding chocolate. The Germans created a brand called Peter's Chocolate, and their plan was to use secret agents to discreetly place the bars among other luxury items in the war cabinet room. And the lethal slabs of chocolate were packed with enough explosives to kill anyone within 5 to 7 metres.
Uh-huh.
But the plot was foiled by British spies.
Hey.
The plot was tinfoiled.
Hey.
By one of the senior intelligence chiefs, Lord Victor Rothschild. So Rothschild found out about this, and he typed a letter to a talented illustrator who was part of his unit to ask him to draw poster-sized images of the chocolate to warn the public to be on the lookout.
Oh, right.
Okay, so it sort of turned into a wartime Wonka competition. Look out for the exploding chocolate. This is what the gentleman, the illustrator, was called Mr. Fish, which adds a level of surreality to it all.
Great.
The letter reads, "Dear Fish, I
oh, Rothschild, yeah. The sort of guy who addresses people by their surnames.
I wonder if you could do a drawing for me of an explosive slab of chocolate. We have received information..."
And he's like, "Oh, popping candy, nice."
Yeah. "We have received information that the enemy are using pound slabs of chocolate which are made of steel with a very thin covering of real chocolate. Inside there is high explosive and some form of delay mechanism. When you break off a piece of chocolate at one end in the normal way, instead of it falling away, a piece of canvas is revealed, stuck into the middle of the piece which has been broken off and are ticking into the middle of the remainder of the slab." I love the fact that this is essentially... a plot from a second draft of a goon show.
Yeah.
And it's actually come true.
I really hope that there was a Nazi whose job, like, because I've got to make this exploding chocolate bar.
Yeah.
One Nazi who would have thought, "I make great chocolate.
Yeah.
can I please be the one in charge of the thin layer?"
Yeah.
Like, "Yeah, this is great." And he was like, "No, but try it."
Yeah. That's right. There would have been like the guys who made the explosive bit.
Yeah.
But there's the one guy who's doing like Mr. Lint. Look, or whatever
before he dies, he will have the most amazing taste.
Yeah, you're right. It was definitely a Swiss collaborator. Yeah. <Did it. laughs>
it's quite nice looking at failed assassination attempts.
They're more happy than the successful ones.
Yeah,
by and large.
The first one I stumbled across was the failed assassination attempt on Louis the 15th in 1757. So there's a guy called Robert Francois Damiens, I think. He managed to sneak past a guard who's not doing a very good job. Sneaks up on the king while he's sleeping. And this is, I've been saying, you know, pointy end goes in there. This guy has the right idea, but the thing is, he uses a tiny penknife and stabs the king in the side once, and then he thinks he's got the job done. Unfortunately, the king is quite regal. He's got a lot of royal robes.
Yeah.
It doesn't penetrate very far into the skin at all. So he gets like a small, tiny wound.
Like, he woke up with a stitch in his side.
Like a bad dream of duck picking him, or a platypus
snapping him.
The thing is, the king is a bit dramatic, and he thinks he's about to die, and before he doesn't die, he confesses to the queen that he's been having loads of affairs. and then proceeds to not die.
Wow, that's Totox. So good. When you're on your deathbed, you want to be damn sure it's your deathbed before you get around to the deathbed confessions.
Damn right. Damn right.
That's like the equivalent of sitting down with your family, putting a DVD in, and going, and it's coming up going, "If you're watching this, I'm probably already dead." Let me start with the A's. Andrew, you're an asshole. I've never liked you.
One I remember from my childhood was not, it is a successful assassination attempt, but it's probably one of the worst assassination jobs out there. It was by a ninja.
Yeah.
By a ninja, 1578, there's a Japanese lord called Eosugi Kenshin. This ninja's tasked to get him. The security is through the roof. He manages to sneak in, and the only... This guy was so paranoid. He had security around him everywhere. He'd wear armor, reportedly, around the place. He was just terrified of people making an attempt on his life, with good reason. So what this ninja decides to do is get him in the one place he's going to be completely vulnerable. He basically finds his long drop. Sits in there.
Oh no.
Sits in there underneath it, waiting for the guy to come and have a squat.
He sits in there. He's got a really long pole.
He's got a spear.
In the loo.
And when he comes and sees that magical eye open up, boom, straight through. And it's really effective because he hits all the internal organs.
Yeah.
You know, and he's
He's not the only one.
He's going to get in one because, you know, he wants to get out of there.
Right? Yeah.
And there was the Duke of Lower Lorraine in the 1060s was a guy called Godfrey the Fourth, the Hunchback, who one of the chroniclers said he was weak in body but excelling in spirit. He was quite an effective ruler. He was married to a woman called Matilda of Tuscany, but they hated each other. Like Matilda would not even let her husband into her sight after 3 years of marriage. And
standard.
And they were also really quite awkwardly on opposite sides of the investiture conflict between the Pope and Henry the Fourth. So the Pope, Gregory the Seventh, thought that he had sort of dominion over the Holy Roman Emperor because he crowned him, and Henry the Fourth said, no, I'm the Holy Roman Emperor, I'm the one in charge. So they were on opposite sides of that argument. And so when Godfrey returned to his own castle, yeah, same thing. Assassin hiding in the latrines.
Hiding in the loo.
Yeah. And obviously, a lot of people would think maybe it was like in the rafters above the toilet, but definitely underneath.
Underneath. And I think this is like, you know, this Japanese guy gets it through the ass while he's taking a shit. I think this is part of the reason why Japanese toilets these days are so nice.
Yeah.
Just want to alleviate any fears. Nothing's going to happen here. Look at this state-of-the-art robotic safe toilet.
Amazing.
Yeah, the temptation to do a really sick ventriloquist act once you've got him on the pole. I leave all my money to the ninja school of Osaka. Goodbye.
He invented the Muppet.
The one thing, like, this guy's bodyguards would have been sitting outside the toilet just going like, geez, he's having a real shit in there. Yeah. He's really struggling with this one.
Screaming. That's what happened to Elvis. There was a ninja hiding in the loo in Graceland.
Roosevelt, Teddy Roosevelt.
Oh, yes, famous such one. A good story.
About to give a speech in Milwaukee, and a guy comes out, shoots him. But it hits the speech, which is 50 pages long, and an eyeglasses case, which kind of takes most of the thing. Not only does this guy fail to kill Roosevelt, but Roosevelt kind of essentially just shakes it off and goes and delivers the speech anyway.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Have you seen this opening words? He says, "Ladies and gentlemen, I don't know whether you'll fully understand that I've just been shot, but it takes more than that to kill a bull moose."
And it's 50 page long speech, like took an hour and a half for him to deliver it. So he did the whole thing and then went to hospital.
Doing the whole thing.
And they left the bullet inside him.
Yeah.
Really?
There's another quote from him where he says, "I do not mind it any more than if it were in my waistcoat pocket." I mean, he was a proper...
This guy's just berating this guy. Like, normally you kind of, like, leave the assassin to go off and get executed. This guy's getting in his face. His brain is great. Yeah,
and he was... Well, and also, that was, like, loads of... Once he'd been shot, loads of people jumped on the assassin, and Roosevelt was like, whoa, let him be, let me take a good look at him. And he basically went, you're a poor little idiot, aren't you? All right, away with him.
The guy's name was John Schrank. He claimed that William McKinley had visited him in a dream and told him to avenge his own assassination by killing Roosevelt. Not that Roosevelt had anything to do with William McKinley's assassination, but also, I feel like, if you're William McKinley, the only thing William McKinley is famous for is being assassinated. So adding to the list of assassinated American presidents is just going to bump McKinley down the list anyway. So I feel the ghost of William McKinley was misguided in suggesting he try him to kill Roosevelt.
It's at this point I started realising that, you know what, it's... Being an assassin is such a widespread of experience.
Yeah.
A lot of these guys are first-time triers.
Yeah.
You know? And we all make mistakes when we're starting out.
That's it. That's the thing. You only get one shot at it, really. You can't go around and do the open mic circuit. work on your 5 minutes.
Yeah. You can't be.
You start with like low key county councillors. You work your way up to like presidents and monarchs.
Well, no. It's like serial killers, which we discussed with Kiri. You actually start by bumping off unwanted pets.
Yeah, that's what you should be doing.
Yeah, you've got to look for the pets that have had fortunes left to them by eccentric owners.
Yes.
And then like sort of like write yourself into the will somehow and bump off the pet and take. Money that way.
That's what you should be doing. You've heard it here. This is you're getting all the hot tips from Western Ford.
John Schrank, full of confidence after killing a mouse with a speech. my nomination for the world's worst assassin is the CIA. CIA and their attempts to kill Castro. Mainly, like, look at the quantity. Over 600 times failed. There's a few noticeable mentions. The attempts on his actual life. They also tried some other tactics, like character assassination.
That's where you start out if you're training to be an assassin.
they had things to try take him out of the public eye unfavorably. Like, they tried to use some thallium salts to destroy his beard. They thought, for a while, like Samson, they thought that...
He would lose his strength.
So they tried things to get rid of his beard.
That's so funny. Well, that's like, they even do that nowadays. Like, they have, there was an episode of The West Wing where they talk about this, and I think it's sort of mirrored real life, where they, like, the President Bartlett was going to meet the Russian premier, and there was a whole debate about whether it'd be indoors and outdoors, and whether they'd be wearing coats and stuff to try and look, you know, like, strong man, it's cold weather, but I'm not wearing a coat, that sort of vibe.
Well, that's like, Paul McGarry told us about this, that Angela Merkel is scared of dogs. So when Vladimir Putin had a meeting with her, he brought a dog along.
A dog with him, yeah.
Yeah, and Paul's got a bit about how she should really have let him know that she was scared of clowns. Yeah. And then Putin would just have turned up as Coco the Clown.
Yeah, they tried to get rid of his beard. They tried lacing his radio studio where he'd do his broadcasts with LSD, so he would be ranting and raving.
Amazing.
And he would lose the public favour.
Have they heard his speeches? They're 8 hours long. They succeeded.
There was one particular stint called Operation Bounty. They would drop leaflets with rewards, like I said, bounties for the assassination of Cuban officials. And the rewards range from like $5,000 up to $1 million, depending on the government official.
So if you got, however, if you got Castro, presumably you got the million.
No. Castro, the bounty for Castro was 2 cents.
Oh, wow.
What? This is like when they were doing the second invasion of Iraq and they produced the 52 cards of the different members of Saddam's government.
Yeah, yeah.
And they're like, you know, the Ace of Spades was the one they wanted to kill the most.
Yeah,
and
the
two diamonds.
Like Comical Ali and Chemical Ali.
Yeah,
and all
exactly. Things. That's a set of cards to do some ninjuring with, my friend. What you want to do is have the watermelon but paint George W. Bush's face on it and then fire the Iraqi cabinet's
first
cards
time,
on
mate.
It.
Yeah. They tried exploding cigars after Castro quit smoking in 85. Someone in Q Branch was going very, very hard out, and he perfected it, and then they were like, oh, he's done that. Apparently Castro was really into scuba diving, so they did try lacing a wetsuit with a type of body fungus or a poisonous fungus that was supposed to eat away at him.
Surely they should have just filled the tank full of helium and next time he gave a speech
mixed with the LSD.
Yeah. Wait, he's just going to sound like Pee Wee Herman, high as a kite.
Sorry guys, he's only just doubled his strength with his amazing speech.
Lucy in the sky with diamonds.
They, as well as the exploding cigar, they also tried an exploding mollusk.
An oyster. So when like he was diving for it.
Yeah, they painted it really bright so it would catch his attention.
Yeah.
Like, this is the most optimistic and far-fetched plot I've ever heard.
Like, it's Fidel Castro, notoriously distractible with shapes and colours
and
movements.
Only when he's underwater.
I sort of feel like, can you imagine the state of the CIA ideas factory after 450 attempts have failed? It must be like the Simpsons writer's room. They're like, right, what have we not done?
Yeah. But then nobody in the room went, pointy end goes in. Nobody in the room.
My favourite failed attempt by the CIA is they tried other things. They tried poison pills. They tried hiring the mob to kill him. Nothing's sticking here. But my favourite was they eventually got in with one of his former lovers to go and visit him and assassinate him when they're getting all intimate. So they said, yes, great. He'll never see it coming. Castro senses something's off. He goes, you've been sent here to kill me, haven't you? And she goes, yes, I have. She breaks immediately. He gives her his pistol and says, go on, do it. Do it. And she goes, I can't. And then they make love.
Wow. That really makes me love Fidel Castro.
What a fucking legend. Can you imagine getting the report back at the CIA? How did the assassin go? She failed. But what? We gave her the things. Yeah
she's now pregnant with his child.
Yeah, exactly.
And then that child will grow up to kill him.
Yeah.
Playing a really long game.
Is that a little bit of Cuban propaganda? It's a great story.
It's an amazing story, isn't it?
It's a great story.
You sort of go, like, the fact that all of these stories have gotten out, just it's like, everyone, like, it's like, clearly America's trying to avoid the publicity of them killing an international leader.
Exactly.
But you just go, look, everyone knows you're doing it. Just fucking bomb him.
First of all, like, they're terrible because they failed 600 times. And also, you're the CIA, you shouldn't be doing this. In the first place, like, we all suspect you're going to be doing it. It's like kids drinking at a school dance. Like, you know, you shouldn't be drinking. We all know you're doing it, but at least don't be shit at it. Don't try to fail 600 times taking a drink.
I'd love to see that list. I'd love it if we kind of like number 174, drop a grand piano on his head. Number 175, paint a tunnel on a wall.
Do you guys know where the word assassin comes from?
The Hashashins.
Yeah, so it's the Order of Assassins, which was founded by Hassan al-Sabah, a devout Nizari Ismaili. They were a Shia group based in the mountains between Persia and Syria from about 1090 to 1275. The word assassin comes from the word assas in Arabic, meaning principled. That's like a lot of people think it's because they smoked hash to calm themselves down. I think that comes from partly from a bit of Marco Polo's writing, and then later like 18th, 19th century writing as well. I'm not entirely sure that that's true, but it's okay. A much more satisfying suggestion that that's what they did. And certainly they were a really small sect, and they were at the time, there was a lot of divisions within Shia Islam. The Third Crusade was underway, and Hassan very much wanted to secure his own position. So he thought the way to do that for his sect was to find a good base that he could, you know, secure himself in. And he found this amazing castle called Alamut, which is at the top of an 800-foot sort of limestone granite ridge. If you look at the pictures of it, it's like a really long, thin castle along the top of this mountain, which is like sheer drops. You can only get it up a really steep track that sort of winds its way up, and it's like a handful of people could defend it. The problem was the castle was owned by the Seljuk Turks, so he decided to steal the castle from them. And what he did that was he just sent missionaries into the local community and then into the castle and started evangelizing. Then he showed up eventually and kept working out and paying people off and converting them and having classes secretly underground. And eventually the commander realized this guy was going to try and overthrow him. He sort of called upon the army to expel him, discovering that they had all turned to him and nobody was in his army anymore.
That is the most beautiful way of stealing
it's
something.
It's so great. It's so like,
what are you going to do? Are you going to physically take it? No, we're just going to convince everyone it's mine anyway.
Yeah. there was a backlash, but they managed to sort of hold off the local Seljuks. And again, he just sort of built up local support, sending out propagandists and people to bribe them. And that was how he sort of spread the control of the assassins. Once he was in the castle and sort of safely bedded in there, he didn't leave the rock for 35 years. He was just like, I am perfectly safe here and I am not leaving. He decided to send a message to his enemies to go, like, obviously the vast numbers of them, they could try and strike back. And he identified a vizier, Nizam al-Mulk, as their single most dangerous enemy of the assassins. So he sent a young Ismaili called Bu Tahir on a mission to the Seljuk court, and as Nizam's attendants were carrying him in litter away to his tent, to his harem for post-dinner sexy times, Bu Tahir approached dressed as a mystic and called that he had a petition, he had a letter for the vizier he wanted to read. So then this randomer comes up to your litter and you go, I don't know, this is a very time of turmoil. He just leans out and goes, yeah, what do you want? And Bu Tahir stabs the old guy in his chest in the middle of this crowd. And that became like the assassin's trademark, that they weren't afraid of risking their own lives, because obviously Bu Tahir was set upon and killed. Mm. And he's like, don't care. And doing it really publicly became a great way of like sending a message to people. And Hassan started training all his men to be, use daggers, stab him, point to the end. They were called Fidais, faithful people, learned to kill at close quarter. Close quarter, so you can also see the white of their eyes as they die.
That's right.
Yeah,
That's your reward. Yeah, you'll die, but you'll get a juicy, juicy gaze.
juicy gaze. maybe the most consequential killing they carried out was that of Conrad of Montferrat. He was the new king of Acre, which is one of the Christian strongholds in the Holy Land. And by assassinating him, it sort of stopped any chance of the Third Crusade re-embedding Christianity in the region. They were quite good at playing a very long game. So there was a Seljuk vizier who attacked a lot of assassins. He then discovered that two of the grooms in his stable were actually Fidais. So he went in there to pick out a horse, and they just stabbed him. So they were like really good at like having like tentacles and fingers in everyone's pies.
I like the thought of them like training the animals to be assassins as well. So you're like, oh, I think I've got clear. And he gets on the horse, and the horse stabs
him. Yeah. The Emir of Damascus instigated a pogrom against the Ismailis. And 2 years later, having sort of become members of the Emir's personal bodyguards, a couple of Fidais assassinated him. So they worked the way up through all the vetting processes. And another leader, he killed an assassin guy in Syria in 1128. He was assassinated 21 years later. My favourite one of their jobs was that sometimes they didn't even have to kill their target. Hassan bribed a member of the Seljuk Viceroy's court in the early 1100s to leave a dagger stuck into the ground beside the Viceroy's bed. So when he woke up the next day, he found this weapon in the floor, had no idea what had happened, didn't tell anyone, and then an assassin ambassador arrived, sending a message from Hassan saying, "Did I not wish the Sultan well? That dagger which was stuck into the hard ground would have been planted in his soft breast." And immediately they signed a non-aggression pact.
There you go.
That's a classic sort of, I can see your house from here, Governor.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a lovely shirt you're wearing.
Yeah. Oh. It'd be a shame if it got stained with blood.
Have you heard of the Lillehammer incident?
Lillehammer is in where the Winter Olympics were?
Yes, now this isn't during the Winter Olympics, okay. But this is actually in the wake of the Munich Olympic massacre mm-hmm. carried out by Black September in 1972. So there was the Israel instigated Operation Wrath of God to retaliate against Palestinians who were members of the Black September organisation.
Are you about to tell me about Mossad bungling an assassination?
Oh yes.
That sounds very un-Mossad like.
Right, well, they identified a guy called Ali Hassan Salameh, one of their primary targets, was working in Lillehammer as a waiter in 1973. And they sent 15 agents, joined by the director of Mossad himself. Now, Lillehammer is a quite small city, so the sudden arrival of, like, 15 strange, quite, no, hefty Mossad-looking agents in 1973 drew a bit of attention. They were under police surveillance immediately.
We're here for sledding.
Yeah, love that. So they identified a Palestinian courier and sort of tailed him, assuming he would sort of have contacts with the guy they wanted to kill, Salameh. And they tailed him to a public swimming pool where he was seen speaking to a Palestinian-looking guy who looked like Salameh. And a female agent got into the pool and got close enough to hear him speaking French, and they knew that Salameh was multilingual, so they decided, this gotta be him. So on the 21st July... they followed this guy and his pregnant wife to a movie theatre and then got on the bus and tailed him at the bus stop, walking home. Within sight of their home, a car of the four agents pulled up and got out and shot him 13 times with a pistol in front of his wife. Horrendous. Problem was, the guy they killed was just a waiter called Ahmed Bouchiki.
Oh, Jesus.
Who happens to be the brother of Chico Bouchiki, the founder of the Gypsy Kings. Yeah, I know. Weird. Absolutely no connection to Palestinian armed forces at all. The conversation with him, with the courier, was completely coincidental. The killing was obviously, like, massive news because there hadn't been a murder in Lillehammer for 36 years. So the attention they had drawn was really quite intense. Nine of the team had already escaped, but six of them were arrested and tried, and five of them were found guilty and convicted. One of the guys they captured, a guy called Dan Arbel, was so nervous as soon as they locked him in his cell because he had claustrophobia, so he cracked immediately under interrogation. They found a key for a Mossad safe house in Paris, and then French police raided that place, discovered keys to other safe houses, blew evidence of other Operation Wrath of God things. Eventually, like, it was so, they were so unmasked so quickly that Golda Meir had to suspend Operation Mask of God because, you know, European governments didn't want assassinations happening in their countries.
I can't believe that they had so many people there, and a big crux of their information was, you swim over there.
Yeah. Is he speaking French?
Is he speaking French? That's good enough for us, yeah?
Yeah. Well, it's because this guy Bouchiki was Algerian. That's why he was speaking French. I looked at some more attempted assassination attempts on American presidents.
Yep.
Abe Lincoln. In August 1864, about a year before Lincoln was shot, an unknown sniper, they didn't actually figure out who this guy was or catch him, shot a rifle shot at him, missing his head, but passing through his hat. As he wrote, it was a good job he wore top hats as opposed to, like, a flat cap.
Yeah, and that's all he wore after that.
Yeah, yeah. Nixon, there were a couple of attempts to kill Nixon. This guy called Arthur Bramer, he decided he was either going to kill Nixon or George Wallace, the former governor of Alabama and noted racist.
Yeah.
So he flipped the coin.
Yeah, well, he went for Nixon. He carried a firearm to an event but was put off by the strong security. On another occasion, he was preparing for a trip to Ottawa to track Nixon down. This is Ottawa, Wisconsin, not Ottawa in Canada. He put one of his guns under the mat in the trunk of his car and fell down into the wheel bed where the wheel is kept, so he couldn't get it out. So when the police were searching his car after they arrested him, they found this gun. And then eventually, a few weeks later, he was the guy who shot and paralysed George Wallace for the rest of his life. So he did get there eventually, didn't kill Wallace. In 1974, a guy called Samuel Bick tried to kill Nixon.
With a biro?
Yes, you wish. No, he decided to hijack a plane and crash it into the White House. He went for a commercial airliner.
Big blunt nose goes in there.
Yeah. but he couldn't take. He was told he couldn't take it off because the wheel blocks were still in place. After shooting both pilots, he was just like, someone's like, "Oh, yeah, I don't think you'll be able to do this." So he's like, "Well, I'll take your word for it."
I'm an assassin, not a pilot.
Yeah. A police officer got close enough to shoot Bic through the plane's door window. Gerald Ford. There were two attempts to kill Gerald Ford within 17 days of each other, both by women. Which is notable. Most of assassins seem to be men down through history. September the 5th, 75, he was in the state capital in California when Lynette Squeaky Fromm, who was a follower of Charles Manson, tried to shoot him. She had four cartridges in the magazine, but none of them were in the firing chamber. So it clicked.
I guess the problem is amateur assassins.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. You can't
training.
Really, yeah, the training.
Yeah, the next attempt on Ford was, as I say, 17 days later in 1975. He's still in California, in San Francisco. Sarah Jane Moore fired at him from about 40 feet away. But a bystander, a guy called Oliver Sipple, had grabbed her arm and deflected her aim. Both Moore and Squeaky Fromm were released from prison in the 2000s after Ford had died. which it seems the polite thing to do.
Yeah.
John Hinckley Jr., who attempted to assassinate
Reagan.
Yeah. You know why he did that?
Because he was in love with Jodie Foster.
He thought it would get her attention. But
well, he'd get a lot of people's attention.
Yeah.
That would have been embarrassing. Remember, he turns up at the door and is just like, "Oh, hello, all of America. Yeah. I can't bed you all at once."
But he said, during his trial, I think he said he called it the greatest act of love in history, trying to kill Reagan. But he had spent months following Jimmy Carter around. Because obviously Carter was running for re-election against Reagan, so he was the current president. He couldn't get close enough to kill him. He was actually arrested on a firearms charge. But then Reagan was elected. Carter lost. So he's like, "All right, you next." And tried to
kill him. Jodie shall have her prize.
Yeah, well, he missed. But he did disable James Brady, Reagan's press secretary, for the rest of his life.
Oh, wow.
James Brady became a prominent gun control advocate after this.
Mm.
And when Brady died in 2014, his death was ruled a homicide due to the critical injury he had suffered 33 years earlier shooting.
We make the old assassins proud.
Yeah. Well, they said it was due to complications from the wound he'd received. So.
Longest murder ever.
Yeah. The White House briefing room, press briefing room, is named the James R. Brady press room in his honour. And Bill Clinton, in September 1994, Frank Eugene Corder, took a leaf out of the book of Samuel Bic by hijacking a single-engine Cessna and actually crashed it onto the White House lawn. Yeah, I don't ever remember this news story. But he crashed this small plane into a tree on the south lawn of the White House.
And that tree is now dead.
Yes, it's now named the Frank Corder tree. he died in the crash. He hadn't done his research because the White House was under renovations at the time, and the President and Hillary were staying at Blair House at the time.
Yeah.
I'm going to fly this into the fucking White House. I don't care if they're there or not. I'm not going to check the diary.
I think he was, according to the accounts, quite drunk at the time.
Two more gins, I'm going to fly this into the White House.
Yeah. I'm going to talk very briefly about the attempts and then eventual assassination of Franz Ferdinand. There had been several attempts to kill him before they actually got him, and some of his guards had been injured in a blast from a grenade in the car behind him, and so they decided they would go and visit them in the hospital. But the driver hadn't been told that. So he turned down the street, it was a one-way street, they couldn't get through, they wanted him to turn around, and Princip had gone to this cafe along the route in the vain hope that maybe he'd still get a chance to kill him, but assuming they'd missed their chance. And there was the car doing a U-ey outside of the cafe.
The most vulnerable manoeuvre you can do.
Yeah. Prior to that, they had failed miserably. This is the Black Hand. And first things first, this parade in Sarajevo was moving down the street, and there was a guy called Mehmed Basic, who was a carpenter. And he'd been involved in an attempt to kill the governor of Bosnia in 1911. So, you'd think he'd done it before, but he had failed that time. So perhaps, he just got the yips from that first attempt. So he just panicked and didn't throw the bomb. And he thought the car was going a bit fast. And actually, there was a lot of Serbs around him and he was a Bosnian. Next up was a guy called Vazo Kubrilovic. He was only 17 and he had a pistol and a bomb. Seeing Mehmed Basic fail to do his job, then became infected by fear and doubt. Car passed by him as well. Next up, a 19-year-old called Nedeljko Kabrinovic. He had TB. Knew he was going to die. So he was the one who actually went, "Yeah, I'm going to throw it." Threw a hand grenade. The driver saw it and accelerated. So the bomb missed, bounced off it, rolled into the street. Not only that, but Kabrinovich had forgotten that there's a 10-second delay on the bomb, so he, like, pulled the trigger and then thrown it rather than going, pull, one,
yeah.
two,
again,
three,
lot
Mississippi,
of emotion,
four, Mississippi. And so it rolled under the fourth car. That was the one with the injured soldiers who later on Franz Ferdinand went to visit. And that, not only that, but Kabrinovich, that guy done the damage, he's the one who then swallowed his cyanide pill to try and kill himself, but it was out of date. And just made him vomit rather than actually killing him. And determined to make sure he died, he jumped into the Milaka River to really make sure of it. But due to a really dry summer, the river was just 13 centimetres deep.
He couldn't kill himself.
Yeah.
No, no, you've got to get the cyanide from the back.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. Goes off later.
For my candidate for World's Worst Assassin, I'm going to pick Felix Yusupov.
Rasputin,
yeah, the guy who, you know, did eventually kill Rasputin.
Is it his fault? Rasputin's a hard guy to kill.
Well, Rasputin's a fucking Hulk, man.
Yeah. Well, Rasputin, basically, a group of nobles thought Rasputin's getting too powerful. He's too close to the royal family. Who is this guy? They're making such terrible decisions. We're the rich people. We should be in charge. And so a group led by Prince Felix Yusupov and Grand Duke Dmitry Pavlovich lured him to Yusupov's Moika Palace. The thing I love about this is Yusupov was, like, immensely rich. The Yusupov family were richer than the Romanovs. They had, like, four castles in Petrograd alone, St. Petersburg alone. They had more money, like I said, than the ruling family. He'd been educated in Oxford. He studied forestry, apparently. he's thought to have been bisexual, very flamboyant. He'd been a member of the Bullingdon Club. He owned lots of horsey and a macaw, a bulldog called Punch. He smoked hash. Makes him appropriate for an assassin.
Yeah.
Played polo, and when he got married to his wife, she wore a veil belonging to Marie Antoinette. And like I say, he's, you know,
what
playboy,
a guy.
Playboy, really rich. It's like if Warren Buffett's idiot son tried to kill Kellyanne Conway, you know, in American terms these days. A lot of people may or may not know the story. They lured him to Yusupov's house.
How did they lure him? Was it just kind of like a row of tiny Russian treats?
Getting increasingly smaller,
of course.
And they just invited him to dinner. And there were, like, nobles and members of the circle, the royal circle.
Okay.
So, you know, he knew they probably weren't his fans, but, you know, you get invited to a dinner in a nice
palace.
Status
put the spell on these guys.
Yeah. Apparently, they invited him to Yusupov's home shortly after midnight. It's really late to go for dinner. And they had dinner in the basement, because apparently a lot of the palace was under renovations at the time, so they're in this sort of secluded cellar. Now, Yusupov tells this story in his book. Yusupov writes about how he killed Rasputin in his book.
Is this like a version of OJ's If I Did It?
This is Yusupov's How I Did It.
Yeah, it's a fucking long book.
It's great. Yeah. Offered him tea and cakes, which had been laced with cyanide. The cyanide, presumably out of date, didn't work. Rasputin asked for some wine, which they poisoned. Had three glasses of it. No sign of distress. About 2:30 in the morning, Yusupov got a revolver, came back down, and he told Rasputin, you better look at the crucifix which is hanging on the wall, say a prayer, shot him in the chest, thought he was dead. They then drove to Rasputin's apartment, with one of the conspirators wearing Rasputin's hat and coat, sort of publicly through the city so people would see it and think, oh, Rasputin's returned home. And then they got back to the palace. Yusupov went back down to the basement, and then Rasputin apparently leapt up and attacked him again. So chased Yusupov. He's like, tag, you're it. And they got to the courtyard, and then apparently again he was shot two or three times and collapsed into the snowbank. They then wrapped him in cloth, dropped him off a bridge into the river nearby. Rumours then, when his body was recovered, say that he had water in his lungs, so he still wasn't dead when he died. May or may not be true.
He's like, Rasputin is made of the same stuff as every hero in Game of Thrones.
Yeah. You think he's dead. Yeah, it's Jon Snow.
Yes.
Yusupov, but my favourite thing about this is, as I say, in 1928, he published his memoirs. In 1932, MGM made a film, Rasputin and the Empress, about Rasputin's relationship with the Tsarina. Yusupov sued MGM for libel. And the libel wasn't that the character based on Yusupov had committed the murder, but that the character based on Irina, his wife, was portrayed as having been seduced by Rasputin as well.
Ooh.
So it wasn't just like, oh no, you're saying I killed him.
Yeah.
You don't get to say that about my wife. So in 1934, 2 year long case, they were awarded £25,000 in damages because it was said, yeah, you've libeled his wife.
There's your bounty right there.
Huge amount of money, yeah. And the disclaimer that appears at the end of every American film now, saying the preceding film is a work of fiction, any similarity to a living person, That is as a result of the precedent set by the Usipov case.
Really?
That's an amazing fact!
Isn't it?
So every time you go and watch a picture at the movies, you are connected to the history of Rasputin.
Yeah.
That is outstanding.
Like, terrible assassin, but what an entrepreneur.
Yeah.
Yeah. Is there, does that also include the whole no animals or children were harmed in the making of this movie?
But I don't know. Yeah, maybe yeah, so.
They should put at the bottom, no mad Russian sex priests were harmed in the making of this movie.
So our candidates for the world's worst assassin are Ben's suggestion of the unknown Nazi who made Churchill's exploding chocolate. Happy suggestion of the CIA and their over 600 attempts to assassinate Fidel Castro, and my suggestion of the self-aggrandizing and multi-attempting assassin of Rasputin, Felix Yusupov. You know what? I think the exploding chocolate is one of, like, it's a wacky idea. We don't have the guy's name. Like, it seems like a bit of a non-event compared to the other two.
I'd like to think he kept trying to peddle the exploding chocolate.
I also feel that Churchill is made of the same stuff as Roosevelt.
Yeah.
He would just eat the chocolate bar, do a massive burp, and a billow of smoke would come out of his mouth and be like, lovely, time for some port.
Yeah. So I'm not going to pick our unknown Nazi.
Is there a tomb in Germany to the unknown Nazi? It's not a tomb, it's just like a toilet.
Yeah, yeah.
You do a dump in there to the unknown Nazi, and there's a tiny ninja underneath it as well.
I'm really tempted by Yusupov, but he did eventually get his man. And he's such a playboy and a cool figure that I think he's nearly too cool. Whereas the CIA tried over 600 times to get Castro, and eventually just our old friend Cancer got him in the end.
The ultimate long game assassin. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And also, like, Castro's not a good guy, but after hearing that story, you're sort of on his side.
Yeah, you love him and you hate the assassins more.
Yeah, that's impressive to turn Castro into an anti-hero.
Yeah, yeah. So I think I'm going to pick the CIA's multiple attempts to kill Fidel Castro. So congratulations,
well
Javi.
Well played.
Very well deserved. Before we go, I've got to give you some of the world's worst news of the week. So the world's worst news of the week this week comes from multiple sources in the UK. Do you know and love, and I know and love, Annika Rice, Ben?
I do know and love Annika Rice.
For overseas listeners or people who don't know, icon of the 80s, presenting shows such as Treasure Hunt and Into the 90s, Challenge Annika. She sort of gave up showbiz in the late 90s to raise her kids, and she's now back presenting TV and radio. And she has a radio show coming out next week on Radio 4 called The Clemmy Hart Years. Mm-hmm. Do you know who Clemmy Hart is?
Nope.
It's Annika Rice's former agent. So basically, in 2004, Annika was sort of on her hiatus, and she was offered to appear in a cookery show alongside the former Blue Peter presenter, Mark Curry, to be called Curry and Rice. She declined to appear on the show, so her previous agent fired her, and she was taken on by Clemmy Hart. Because there were still offers coming in. She needed someone to be able to handle offers. And so she was, you know, offered to go on, like, a celebrity fitness show. And Clemmy would go, well, you know, Annika's a bit out of shape at the moment. And it's like a celebrity singing show. And she said, Annika's, have you heard Annika sing? Can't really sing. Just feeling all these things. Always very polite. Always very nice. Always looked after her. Charming to the prospective clients. Wasn't a socialite. Never sort of went out to all the big parties. Really hardworking agent. When she became pregnant, sent an email around saying she was leaving her job, and Annika had a new agent, and Annika sort of has begun to take on more work. Clemmy Hart does not exist. Clemmy Hart was Annika Rice being her own agent.
Yes, Annika. Yes. We've all been tempted by that trick.
Yeah, it's amazing. She says herself, she just kind of wanted to be part of it still. She was raising kids, but she didn't want to lose touch with TV and all that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
And so it just meant she was able to, you know, actually have a look at the jobs that were coming in herself, decide if she wanted them, because her previous agent had been like, oh, you should take this Curry and Rice program, which sounds terrible. So it just kept going on. She did appear on a celebrity hypnosis show hosted by Philip Schofield, which I have no recollection of, but then again, I may have been hypnotised at the time. And she took her friend Lisa along to the show to pretend to be Clemmy.
Who knew Annika Rice was full of such subterfuge?
Yeah, I love it so, so much. So apparently she's got a program coming out on Radio 4 next week where she basically does a stand-up show talking about her time pretending to be Clemmy Hart.
This is Joaquin Amazing. Phoenix level of long con.
Yeah.
Yeah, I bet that in her 70s or 80s, Annika Rice is going to have killed someone by having poisoned them 40 years ago.
Before we go, Javi, where can people find out more about you and your work and see you
on that? Yeah, you can find me on the socials. Twitter is at thisjavier, and Instagram is thisjavierpix.
Great. And all your gigs and stuff and links to stuff will be on.
Yeah.
Awesome.
My ramblings.
Meanwhile, we're all off to schnabel as a group. Thank you for listening to Westwood Forward. Goodbye.
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 First Foot Forward is part of Podnose, the UK's leading independent entertainment podcasting network. For episode archives of Worst Foot Forward and all of the shows on the network, visit us at www.podnose.com. You can also follow us on Twitter via @podnose or send us an email via admin@podnose.com.